This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our chance to hear a story today that couldn't be told for more than 60 years after World War II. Not until the National Archives declassified a roster of OSS personnel in 2008 could John Cardinale begin to discuss the secret work he had done with the Office of Strategic Services during World War II. Alongside his name on that roster are Hollywood stars Marlena Dietrich and Sterling Hayden, director John Ford, the one and only Julia Child, and four men who would go on to become directors of the CIA, which morphed out of the OSS after the war. But this was so much of a secret in 1943 that Johnny Cardinale couldn't even tell his family back home in Monterey, California, what he was doing. They believed he was in the infantry training to go overseas. And you mentioned family, and I think it's important for people to understand, too, what happened to your family. We've had a lot of folks on this show over the years who were taken up by the Japanese internment, moved from coastal regions or closer to the coast, further inland, a lot of them in Arizona and Arkansas and Idaho, all over the place. Some people don't know that Italians and Germans were rounded up, too, and that includes your parents. What happened to them?
My parents went inland to Robles del Rio.
So because they were in Monterey, right on the coast, they said, we need to move you further inland. So they took them in 25, 30 miles, something like that?
Yeah, away from the coast, away from their home. We lived right on the coast there in Monterey Harbor. And they had to move inland. And my folks didn't know anything about it. But they knew they had to move up. I didn't know what I was doing anyway, but until I found out later. That's why I pulled a lot of string. I went through hell trying to get them back in, which I finally did.
And it was because they were not American citizens. They'd immigrated from Sicily and hadn't become citizens.
Oh, enemy aliens.
Right, they're enemy aliens, just like the Japanese and some Germans. So they get put into this house further inland with another Italian family. But once you're in the OSS, you found out about that, and what'd you do?
I found out my folks had moved out of their home, and I was kind of teed off. And that's when I went to my superiors in Washington, D.C. I was still in training, and told them that my folks were driven out of their home. And here I was in a highly secretive organization known as OSS. And I don't see why they were driven out. And I'd like to find out if they can have the power to send them back home. And we said, well, let's work like hell to try to get them back. But it took about a month or so after they pulled strings and paperwork and whatnot. They went back home. And the other party's still there. And my family, the only one we went back home. All the rest of the aliens in Monterey, hundreds of them, hundreds of Italian family moved away from the coast. Here the Cardinale, the first one to get back to home on account of my job, what I was doing, you know.
But they never knew that, your parents.
They never knew why or how they went back home, and all the rest of their paisanos and all that all stuck inland. San Jose, Salinas, they went all over the country. And the Cardinale, they went back to their house. They couldn't figure out, they couldn't say it because they didn't know anything, what was going on.
So your wife and your infant son are back here in Monterey. You're back in Washington, D.C., training with the OSS. What kinds of things did they teach you to do? What was your understanding of what it was you were going to be doing overseas?
Well, my understanding was work behind enemy lines, because they always told us they were going to work behind enemy lines and do this, do that, learn how to blow bridges, railroad tracks, and munition dumps or whatever. Whatever came to solve or whatever to do, they gave us a job. They shipped me from Washington, D.C. I went to New York and Washington Harbor. From Washington Harbor, I took a Liberty ship to Maidenhead, London, a little village, like Pacific Grove in Monterey. They had a big three-story building, a little mansion or whatever. We had OSS agents, foreign agents. They're all OSS. An OSS building we took over, and radio, everything. Mostly, they're concentrating on radio operating. They made radio instructor out of me, so Morse code, radio operator, instructor, and taught the nine allied agents, they spoke broken English naturally, how to operate radio, taught them Morse code, and taught them how to read, decipher a message. And anyway, from then on, I had the nine persons under me, and there was a man and wife, code name was Jack and Jill. I think they're French. Out of the nine, I never knew the names. All I knew the code names. And they don't know me. And my code name was Abner. That was my code name.
And did that ever bother you, that you didn't know people's real names and they didn't know yours?
No, it didn't bother me. It just, as long as they knew who I talked to, as far as the name, you know, Godfrey Team or Max Team, then a woman, agent, her name was Kaja, and I still didn't know her name. She's about 3 years older than me. She's one of the best operators I had as far as code operating. She's about four or five words a minute, which is pretty fast for a greenhorn. So I was doing 20 at that time, 19 to 20. So
people hear words a minute, they think typing. You're talking Morse code by hand, 20 words a minute of Morse code.
And a word consisted of five letters. So I was doing 20 of those five-letter words a minute. And that's when you're coming in the radio, dots and dashes, you're putting everything down, see? And you're putting like S would come in, did, I put down S, L, A, dash, dot, dot. So I put down the letters, you know. Then you combine them together, and you can make out the message. And I knew the way the operator worked as far as the Morse code. And it's just like speaking to you. If I knew you and know your voice and all that and hand movement, I know who you were. You don't have to tell me your name. Some of these agents were caught, and the Nazis would take over the radio and all that. And I knew right off the bat that they were captured by the tone, the hitting of the keys, you know. And I knew just like a voice, to me, it was like a voice. That's how sharp I was, believe it or not. I'm not bragging, but that's how sharp I was. I was pretty good at that. Know that the foreign agents that took over radio would always start with a message. But I had my agent start out with dit, before I put the message. This foreign agent that took over the radio, one of my agents got caught, didn't come out with dit, right. Shows that he was a foreign agent. They all came in like that, see? But the first three hits on your key would be dit, S. That means S. And when the key just started, instead of the S, they just start out the message, and I knew right off. Now that, I can tell by the key movement also.
So I want everyone to understand what you're saying. The people you're training are folks who are then going to be out basically undercover in their home country, but feeding the OSS information. So they're spies in their native countries, and they're transmitting information back to you. And you could tell, if you heard Morse code, you knew the rhythm of each one of these people's transmissions. So if it didn't match what you were used to, that was a tell to you, well, that's not really who I think it is, and that person's been captured or exposed.
Yeah, that's really when it, that helped quite a bit by knowing the movement of the keys, the fingers on the, you know, the telegraph key. Like I said, it helped quite a bit, and then I just kept playing with this guy using my agent's key. We're playing back and forth. He's giving me his information. I gave him false information, so on and so forth. It went on for about a few hours, and we had a move, so I didn't contact him anymore. I knew he was caught. He would drop right in a German bivouac. The Air Force, I guess, goofed up or something. That's where they caught these guys. When the Americans overran that area, they had got that one agent who was still alive. He had one ear cut off, and the other agent, they said that they had shot him. So out of the two, one survived, but they were still cut off. So anyway, so we knew he was caught, and they killed him.
And you're talking about how you knew these transmissions so well, you knew who was who. But what kind of information is typically being transmitted when they're sending something back to you or vice versa? What kinds of things were you discussing?
Most of the information they wanted, or we wanted, is how strong they were, how strong we were in that certain area. So either the Germans would attack or we would attack. But all of the needed, so either the Germans would attack or we would attack, but all of the needed, the strength of their side and the strength of our side and how many heavy weapons, cannons or whatever, that's the information they wanted. Approximately how many men or how many companies there and all that.
So you were privy to a lot of information that the guys actually fighting those battles were never privy to.
That's right. And we knew a lot. We learned quite a bit through our agents, and I had gone behind enemy lines twice, I remember. The most important was the when I took the girl, Kaja. They made a movie, The Bridge at Remagen, R-E-M-A-G-E, Remagen.
Right.
Bridge at
yeah.
Remagen. That's the one we dealt with. We got Kaja. They wanted, no, Americans couldn't go forward across the bridge because the Germans wanted to blow it up. If they kept it intact, the Americans go over it and attack Berlin right now. And that's why the Germans wanted to blow it up. They had, the piers were loaded with dynamite and all that. Anyway, they wanted, while they're fighting back and forth, the Germans on one side and Allies on the other, they wanted to know how strong they were on the other side, the German. They sent us a message, so I round up Kaja, my best agent, good operator. We got underwear for her, German underwear, German shoes, long wool stockings with holes in them, show that they're poor, you know. And he got her a German bike, German bottle of water, not like bottled water. We had a regular jar, like fruit jar. That was a bottle of water, a round loaf of bread, hard as a rock. We didn't cut it, so it was broken in half.
Yeah.
And I had her bite into the bread two or three times with her teeth because the Germans, the Gestapo, were pretty sharp. They're just as sharp as we are. So in case they had to capture, come across, they want to check teeth mark, check this mark, take They knew everything. Anyway, they checked the sock and all that, wool sock. Anyway, we rounded up clothing for this college. You had to go across the river with me, Rhine River, that one, the bicycle. And we had a couple blanket each, a radio. I had a radio for her, Morsky. And I had a radio myself and a blanket. And she had a bicycle. And I rode her across the Rhine River like 1 in the morning, dark night, 1 in the morning. Our side were all notified. We're coming over. Didn't say who's coming, but we're coming. So don't shoot anybody going across the Rhine River. Okay, that order not to shoot it. Anyway, we went across about 1:30 in the morning, dark as hell. We reached the other side, on the German side, that's behind the enemy lines. The Rhine River was a border, and I pulled the boat up, a rubber boat. The engineers had furnished the doors. I pulled it up about, from the little coastline there, maybe 40, 50 feet, pulled it up, and got some bushes hid behind inside there. I went back to the coast, got branch, kind of wiped off the boat markings of being dragged to where we're staying that night. Anyway, cleaned all that up, and we laid there in the boat together. Blanket was cold. And I told Kaja, I said, listen, comes daylight, I want you to go out there about 100 feet from where I'm staying on your bike, stop, get off the bike, and make out you're fooling around with your bike or something, fiddle around with it, you know, to show that it's broken or something, so the other bikes would go by. So if you want two bikes go by, do not join them. When you see four or five, then you get up, get in your bike, and join them. So a few bikes went by. She's still there fiddling around with her bike. After a bunch came in, four or five or six, I forgot how many there were, and she got on her bike and joined them. Now she's going down toward the Rijmegen Bridge on enemy side. So the guards, I guess, knew these people going to work or somewhere. They blew a lot of face, you know, and passed her by. She had a passport and everything, you know. So they went this, and she went that way, more or less. And she got herself a boarding house. She stayed there, and she started sending me messages that she's all right. Okay, so I stayed there that night, watching out what's going on, operating, sending messages back to our lines.
And where were you this whole time?
I was hiding in the boat with the bushes around me so they wouldn't see me from the highway. I was off the highway maybe 30, 40 yards maybe, away from the highway, a lot of German army truck, tank, whatever, going by, troop trucks, and I radioed this back to our side. They were taking it all in. Now, I was there a few days. She took up with a German captain, I think it was, a high officer, anyway. I'll put it this way. She was shacking up with them, okay? That's her job as an agent. That's part of your job, to get information. So, but he was revealing everything to her. He was revealing everything to her. They were staying together in an apartment house somewhere, and I would send it back to our side, Allied side. And finally, they went over across and got over Kaja. She was safe. And that was Kaja's mission. That was her first mission. Kaja, my best operator, I think it was, says paid her a couple, $3,000. I'm not sure. Operation did was very good. We sent her back to our lines way back there. About a month or so later, we get a message. Kaja's killed. And I said, well, how come it happened? Her and some corporal army driver driving a Jeep in a side road and blew up in landmine. Not the main road. Main road was all clear of mines, you know. But the side road, they even said that. Not cleared of any landmine. It went sky high. That poor guy. She was a good operator.
And when you were talking about the Rhine and the Rijmegen Bridge, and you're hiding out in the bushes, you said for about 3 days?
Something like that. I'm not sure, but quite a few days, you know, until we got information we needed.
But how nerve-wracking was that? I mean, there's Germans just crawling over the whole area. You had to be afraid that you'd be discovered.
I tell you. I hate to say that, but you know the old saying, you have white shorts? My shorts were white. Anyway, it was scary. I wouldn't know John Wayne, you know, or people like that. You know, you fired an Indian, six go down with one shot. I want to talk about John Wayne. He had applied for OSS. He wanted a captain's rating. Right off the bat, a captain rating, back because well-known and all that. That was John Wayne. OSS said, no, you got to go through the rank like all these other guys that pay like us. He wanted a captain's rating. They wouldn't let him, so he didn't join the OSS. OSS is pretty strict.
On the cover of your book here, 65 Years of Secrecy, I see you crouching down in the forest. You've got your sidearm there on your belt, and you've got a helmet on. Is that a regular Army uniform or those plain clothes? What was your typical dress?
My dress is fatigues. No insignia, no identification. Our missions had to be done right there and then. It didn't go through channels. If it went through channels, it would take days. We were in Belgium, Holland, Germany, and all that. We couldn't wait for orders. We just had to do it right there and then. That's why a lot of the stuff that had been going on, not even on record. So a lot of the mission there wasn't on record. Huh? In fact, they had a letter from the colonel, from a CEO, says Cardinale managed many behind-the-line crossings. Nobody knows that.
Well, they're starting to find out because you're finally allowed to talk about it after more than six decades of silence. On the back cover of this book, 65 Years of Secrecy, which I have linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, you'll see windmills along the banks of the Rhine River. When we come back, Mr. Cardinale will explain how a quick glance at those windmills would help him know where to hide out when he was behind enemy lines connecting with a leader of the Dutch underground, and also how he helped that leader, codenamed the Dutchman, to uncover a mole within his ranks. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.